Welcome to the Sean Chandler Podcast, a place to talk movies, TV, and pop culture too much. This is episode number 2. We're going to be talking about the Oscars as well as Birds of Prey and the reaction to it. Joining me today is Griffin Schiller. Griffin, how you doing?
Hey, I'm doing pretty great, man. You know, it's always great after the Oscars. I feel like we can all calm down. You know, whatever happened at the Oscars, it happened. And we can just move forward with this year in film. So, we'll get into it a little bit later on. But, like, I'm pretty excited to talk about the ceremony. But I'm also just really excited to move past it and then just start looking forward. Yeah.
Especially when you have, like, 3 months straight of award ceremonies, 2 months straight of nominations, awards. So you just keep kind of having the same conversation for a little bit. This is the final one, the definitive answer. And then we can start to move forward and look at a new year. And of course, we're in February, so there's like not a lot of high prospects for best picture.
Well, I actually think this February is better than some February's past. I think we've actually got a lot of stuff between Birds of Prey, The Invisible Man.
That's right. I mean, you saw Invisible Man last night, didn't you?
I did, and I can't talk about it because I know this is going out into the world.
But
I can't
we
even
also
put a
know
social-
the context under which that came up, so he can't say anything, but through deductive reasoning, we might have put something together, though we don't want to get Griffin in trouble. Continue talking about movies besides The Invisible Man.
I really wish I could talk about The Invisible Man. We'll just leave it at that.
Upgrade from the same director,
yeah,
this one naturally has me very curious.
Because when
I think about movies that I would make, people frequently ask me, hey, what movie would you make? Like, I think something like Upgrade, Your Next, kind of these smaller, high concept, just really nicely crafted. And so then when you have something that looks like more of that, I really dig the Blumhouse kind of model. So a bunch of things that kind of have me very intrigued about this one. But since you can't talk about
100%, it. Yeah, 100%. Yeah. Well, what I can say is that the movie was made, I read, my friend Zach Pope texted, or our friend Zach Pope texted me, and he said that the film was made for $7 million, which I don't know if that's actually true or not, but if that's the case, I was floored by just like what they were able to accomplish on a $7 million budget, which is in line with the whole Blumhouse thing, which they're just, I'm so excited for everything that they kind of do, whether I like the project or not. It just like they're able to accomplish so much on a shoestring budget. It's like the Robert Rodriguez style of filmmaking almost.
That's the whole thing to me is like as someone that kind of grew up, my formative years with movies was the 90s where you had a lot of kind of these lower budget action movies, high concept stuff, as opposed to everything just being big blockbusters. And Blumhouse is kind of doing that. And they're like the one studio that has figured out how to make really profitable films that aren't just massive in budget. They're just like high concept. You get what the movie is very easily. And then they make a trailer that sells you on this simple concept. Great business model. Anyway, as we prepare to start talking about the Oscars and Birds of Prey, one important thing we got to talk about, this is a podcast, therefore it is supposed to be available on all the different podcast places. I'm working on that right now. It's on Spotify and then here on YouTube. I've applied to iTunes. It takes a while to get accepted, and it's taking longer than I anticipated. But as soon as that happens and I'm in the iTunes, the Apple podcast store, I will let you know about it. And one of the things I'll be doing after I finish this is applying to all the directories to try and get it in all the possible places that you could watch or listen to a podcast. So that is coming. And once you follow on any of those ones, please comment on them, like whatever you can do, leave a review, help the podcast be nice and successful. One more thing, a little bit of housekeeping. Griffin mentioned Zach Pope. He's probably going to be on the podcast actually next month during South by Southwest. He'll be in town. So actually the three of us will be seated in a room together because we're going to be rooming for South by Southwest together. So he'll be on here. And next week, 3C will be on the podcast and we'll be talking about video game movies, Sonic, all kinds of fun stuff like that. That's what's coming in the future. But right now, that's not what we're talking about. We are talking about the Oscars. What's your first impression on the, actually, before we kind of dive into you, I should probably just start things off with kind of where I'm at. I'm not an award show guy. I'm not a best of person. That's never been my strong point. And I can, you know, talk on certain degrees, but like when it comes to like picking the best, my brain doesn't even work that way. So going into this one, people are like, hey, you should make a predictions video. You should make your picks video. I legitimately did not have opinions. Like, I didn't have strong thoughts. Like, I could look at some of the categories and say, like, these ones felt weird that they were nominated. And the nominations themselves, I had strong opinions on that. But when it comes to, like, here's nine movies that I thought all of them were really good to great to phenomenal, I don't have like this, oh man, any strong opinions like that. I can respect a bunch of different paths that people might've gone with that. So that's gotta, even the reason I'm glad that you're here is you're better in this territory of having stronger opinions on some of this stuff. So I'll pretend like I do, and I'm going to disagree with whatever you say. What was your take, kind of first impressions on the event itself and everything?
Yeah. So I guess like just the show as a whole.
Yeah. Let's kind of start things off with the show, the no host, all that.
Yeah, so like last year when they did the no host thing, I thought it went really well. The show was a lot more streamlined. It felt like a nice, like it had a nice energy, a nice pace to it.
Yeah, it was brisk. It moved a little bit better.
Very brisk. I thought that I thought the show actually wound up being shorter. I don't actually know if that's true, but it felt like it was.
Like, I don't normally watch, or I hadn't previously. Yeah. And so last year I started up and I was like, this is actually moving at a good pace. This doesn't feel overly long. That's what I'd felt in the past, was like, why is this taking so long? Last year was like, this feels right.
Yeah. No, I completely agree, which is why when they said they weren't going to do a host again, I was like, oh, heck yes. Like, this is great. I think this will work, and just do literally exactly what you did last year, and it'll be a great show. They kind of did that this year. They sprinkled in a few too many musical numbers for my liking. Yeah. I mean, they always do the best original song performances there. Realistically, I just wish they would just cut those out.
Right.
Because the show goes on too long. And I think that last night or two nights ago, whenever the Oscars was, the big thing for me was it just felt long. It felt drawn out. There wasn't really an energy to it like it had last year. They felt like they were just adding in things to fill time. Like, Eminem had a random performance in it, and I was just like, what? Like, what? Like, cool. Like, sure, it's cool to see Eminem perform Lose Yourself, but,
and
like,
the best part, watching the reactions to the crowd, because whether the person was, like, doing this or rapping along with him, or the people that were just, like, doing that, whatever they did was hilarious as soon as it cut to the audience.
Yeah, that was my, honestly, that if anything, that was my favorite part of it, was like, you know, the memes going around of like Billie Eilish and her brother Phineas, and then like Idina Menzel's like, what? And then
Kelly like Tran was like all in.
Yeah, and then Martin Scorsese and I think his daughter were just like
you know, crossed arms.
The reaction shots were just priceless, and so like if anything, that's what I'm happy came out of it. But I mean, realistically, we didn't need that. Right. Like, come on, just like make it move, go faster, just get through all the shit.
Right. And like, even to your point of, I don't think we need the songs. It feels like one of the least consequential of the categories, because you even think the movie Rocket Man, like that song, I don't remember it. Like, I do not remember that song. I remember Into the Unknown because I literally have heard it at least three times every day since mid-November in my van or driving my kids anywhere.
Yeah.
But like this, the one from Rocket Man, it's like, that is not the song from that movie that I remember. I remember all the classic Elton John songs. And then it's a category that almost feels like it's designed just to have songs during the thing, but it just slows it down because you times three, you're adding 15, 20 minutes to the show.
Yeah.
And
I think the big thing was that like two nights ago, it just really, it almost felt like I was watching the Grammys to some extent. Mm-hmm. Like, cause the Grammys is really tedious, and like it takes them forever to get through all the categories, because they're doing all the musical numbers and whatnot. And like, they had like however many musical numbers were there, but it just felt like it was dragging on. Like they kept adding stuff in, and then like, look, I appreciated the best original score little number that they did. Like that was cool. That was different. But also, like, I think at that point, I was just like, oh God, is it another performance? Like, can we just please just get to the awards?
Yeah, think about it, because that's seven musical numbers. Because the five nominations, Eminem doing his show that was supposed to happen 18 years ago. if you guys don't know the story on this, like he was supposed to, it's the only nominated song that ever didn't get performed at the show because he wouldn't censor it. And so they didn't let him do it. 18 years later, they're like, I guess they shook hands, figured out a way to make it happen. So then that's six, and then they did the score number. So that's seven musical numbers. If they're only 3 minutes long, we're over 20 minutes of the show doing musical numbers.
I know.
And you can, it's eight, because then we had the Kristen Wiig, Maya Rudolph. They decided to sing us a song, too, in the middle of their improv bit that did not land particularly.
Oh, they didn't work for you? Oh, I actually quite enjoyed it. Even I thought they were funny. Yeah, well, I mean, the song, no, but, like, I mean, at that point, I was just kind of like, whatever. But, like, them riffing and doing their thing, like, I really enjoy them together, and I think they're hilarious. And so, like, whatever the heck they were doing, I was like, okay, this is funny and entertaining. It's, like, it was, like, one of the only times that the people presenting, like, had, like, personality. Yeah. The other time was, like, Steve Martin and Chris Rock, who, truthfully, probably should have just hosted the entire thing, if we're being honest. And then the other thing I thought that was weird was, like, they had like, all these presenters, but then they had people who would present the presenters who would then present the winners with the award. I was just like, why is all of this necessary? Like, what in the world?
So, yeah, it's where last year I felt brisk, like we said before. This one, I thought it started quickly. Like, we got to... Actually, it started with the musical number two, because it started with the Monet one.
The
so
opener,
we really are up to, like, eight, nine musical numbers. But so it starts off, and, you know, we get to best actor, like, or supporting actor, like, immediately. And I was like, oh, man, they're really getting to it. Like, they're not wasting time to get to the good stuff here.
Yeah.
And then 3.5 hours later, we get to Best Pictures. Like, okay, maybe this went on a bit too long. Okay, let's move it along. How did you feel about the biggest surprises, biggest disappointments in that category? What did you take on all that?
Yeah, so overall, I thought it was pretty predictable.
Yeah, a lot of predictability.
I mean, like, the ones that, like, I couldn't necessarily... Like, I don't know. There were a few surprises. Like, I think I thought Parasite was going to take production design. It went to Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood would have been my second choice. So it's like, even when I got it wrong on my predictions, I was like, oh, okay, right. So they just went with the other choice. It just came down to the fact that Parasite won the three, it took the triple crown, basically. It won Best Original Screenplay, Best Director, and Best Picture, which is just kind of nutty, because I don't even remember the last time a film did that.
Right.
And the fact that it was a movie... it was an international feature. It wasn't even an American film. Is like even more unprecedented. I thought, like, I knew it was going to win Best Original Screenplay after the WGA and BAFTAs. I had a feeling that Bong would probably win director, but I still went with Mendez just because he won the DGA and the PGA, and the film won the PGA. I don't know. Part of me was like, well, people like Bong. This guy has just been like the center of attention the entire award season. But I was like, okay, it's the Academy, so I went with Mendez. Really not surprised I went with Bong Joon-ho. I still thought, though, at that point that 1917 was going to take Best Picture, because I was like, all right, they've awarded Parasite Best Original Screenplay. Bong Joon-ho got his Oscar for himself for directing, but they're not going to give it to Parasite for Best Picture. There's no way. Like, I knew it was a two-horse race, right, between 1917 and Parasite, but I still was like, 1917 feels like the film that probably will win and should win, and given
it's
the nominations and whatnot.
It's a classically Academy-type movie. War film with an interesting story bent to it, told well. That's a lot of stuff that just feels like that's what Academy voters love, stuff like that.
Absolutely. And like I mentioned before, it won the PGA, it won the DGA, it won it won the BAFTA. And so like it was winning all these awards prior to the Oscars. But the thing to take into account is that that Parasite won the SAG Ensemble Award, and the Actors Guild is the largest voting body in the Academy. And so I think because of that, and because of how Parasite just resonated with so many people, and because like that film just had all of the momentum the entire award season, it came out on top with Best Picture. And I think the best way that someone put it, it was Kyle Buchanan, who writes for the New York Times. He said that like Bong Joon-ho just has this like rock star kind of energy. Like everywhere he goes, you would see, he would show up at events and people would be flocking to him. Like his speeches were just so good, and like they hit the point. And then he like also honored his fellow nominees, and so like of course that movie won. And of course he won, because like it was just, it was the film of the year, I guess to say.
Yeah, wait, just a couple stories on that one. You mentioned he shows up places like a rock star. So my story about him, I saw the movie at Fantastic Fest, and actually had a 1-2 punch of, I watched Parasite and then Knives Out back to back at this film festival. I'm just standing outside waiting for my next movie to start, and this black SUV pulls up, door opens, and this guy steps out of it. And I looked at it like, I was like, I bet that guy's a big deal. Whoever that is, that guy's a big deal. By the end of the day, I will know who that is. I don't know who he is. That guy's a big deal. And then he won a bunch of Oscars Sunday night. It was Bong. And that's story number one. And so he just happened to show up at my one story of being at the place where he did show up. People did not flock to him, but he did get out of, you know, one of those bulletproof Escalades or whatever. Second one is that just even when he won the first Academy Award, there's all these videos of him on Twitter, and you just see him just like staring at it while the other person's talking, like in just absolute joy and like, wow, this really just happened. And like, that's infectious. Like when you have someone that so appreciates the moment that they're in, and like, this is amazing that this happened. All right, couple other directions to go with the Parasite win. My somewhat cynical take on it is very frequently Oscars get the Oscars so white hashtag, and all the nominees get a lot of that. And then people looked at the nominees this year, and a lot of kind of shutouts and a lot of white people, men. And my cynical side, so is this their – no, no, see, we cannot recognize talent in other people too. Like I got a cynical side that sees a little like, okay – I am in no way questioning the validity. I'm not saying it wasn't deserved. I'm not saying any of that. But from the way humans actually work, the psychology of the I get a little bit of are the pendulum swinging, or they got all the kickback last year with a Green Book. Is this another pendulum swing? Because that seems like they do a little bit of this stuff of they.
Right. Yeah, they do have a tendency to do that, because you're right. Like, what was it, the year when did Moonlight win Best Picture? That was 2016. And I believe 2015 it was Well, I don't know. That's a different sort of thing. But anyways, but like I think the year before was the Oscars, so was another Oscars so white thing, and then like Moonlight won Best Picture that year, or there was like something like that. I can't quite remember. But I think there might be a little truth to what you're saying. I don't think that affected Parasite's win. I think Parasite probably would have won regardless, no matter who was nominated, just because it just was that movie that was kind of universally loved. It was that good, and like it just like it was probably the most talked about movie of the year, aside from Joker. But that's like a different kind of talk about. That was like a controversial kind of conversation.
Yeah.
Like Parasite, like everyone was just raving about it. Like no one had I can't think of a single person that had a bad thing about that movie or to say about that movie. That's seen it, right? Other than the gentleman that went viral on Twitter. But that's a conversation for another time.
If you guys are tracking this, yesterday on Twitter, a video went viral of a guy, Robert Storms. I'm actually Facebook friends with him. I don't really know him. I'm friends with a lot of other YouTubers and stuff like that, so I don't want to linger on talking bad about other people. The clip does not make him look the best, and some of his arguments, not the best. So we'll leave it at that. But
yeah, but going back to your thing about that, you're right. Like, it's a big, it's a monumental thing. It's historic. It should be celebrated. But don't let, like, I think we can do two things. We can celebrate what they've accomplished and still criticize them for not being where they need right. to be. You know, this goes back to the nomination process. Like, this is we moved past that process, and you guys succeeded in recognizing diverse talent and also, you know, recognizing arguably the things most deserving of that. But like, there's still a lot of groundwork to go. Right. And I agree with you. I hope that this doesn't overshadow the fact that there is still progress that needs to be made.
One more thought I had on Parasite was that, I think one of the best things, my friend Rachel Wagner said this about it. She goes, I can't think of a movie that audiences are having so much fun with and critics are loving, and you can just be entertained by it. And then you can mm-hmm. also have the conversation. It's hitting both. Yeah. And that's what you want a Best Picture nominee to do, a movie that
yeah.
the audiences yeah. can enjoy just as much. And that's where the title and some of the market, it's a movie that's probably tough to market. It's a film to me that if it hadn't played it at Fantastic Fest, I might not have seen it because I'd be like, what is this? What are you talking about? It's called Parasite. Mm-hmm. Talking with my wife, she goes, what is Parasite anyway? Oh, it's really funny. It's like about a family and a rich, it's really funny. She's like, yeah, seriously, what is it? Is it a horror movie or is it a comedy or is it a drama? Like, and I'm like, yeah, it's really funny. She goes, no, yeah, right. Yeah, I get it. You want to make a joke right now. Is it a horror movie because it's called Parasite or is it a drama? Because yeah. it got nominated, like, no, it's really funny. Like, it's and it gets serious, and it has a turn, it has a lot of things to say. But like, I literally didn't know anything about it. I hadn't seen a trailer. All I knew was the title Parasite, so I kind of assumed the same thing. I guess it's like a really, what kind of horror movie am I about to go into? And then immediately it's like funny. and it's funny yeah. for an hour straight, and you're like, okay, what am I watching? I don't quite yeah. understand this. And that's what I think of when I think Best Picture, a movie that really can make something that's enjoyable and has something to say and is incredibly well made.
Yeah, I completely agree. Yeah.
So, any final thoughts on the Oscars?
No. I mean, like, this, listen, 2019 was probably one of the best years in film in recent memory. And it was definitely one of the best years of the past decade. And just, it was great being able to see a lot of those films recognized and honored at the Oscars. And yeah, I mean, I think like when we look back on it, we will remember a lot of these movies, for a long, long right. time. So it's just, you know, I think we can finally close the book on that year and then yeah. move forward yeah. to 2020.
When you think about that, like the Best Picture nominees, it's a big list of movies that people are probably in different groups are going to be watching a long time. People are yeah. gonna, like, this is going to be the definitive version of Little Women for 20 years. Of course, comic book people are going to be raving about the Joker for years. Ford versus Ferrari. Dads are going to be watching that on Saturday afternoons for a very long time. A Quentin yeah. Tarantino movie, of course, people are going to love it. That's a good set of movies when you have something like that. And of course, Taika is now, you know, one of the hottest directors out there. I remember what I had written down. I guess it was announced yesterday. This was the lowest viewership the Oscars of all time.
Yeah.
And I thought that was interesting specifically because I thought the nominees, I thought would draw more people in. It's a yeah. set of movies that more people would be like, I've seen those, I'm interested. Case in point, yeah. obviously I do this full-time review movies, but this is the first year I can remember where I'd seen like all nominees when they were nominated. And yeah. Yeah. and that's a little bit because I got a little bit lucky with Parasite at Fantastic Fest. And then a lot of that is they just made they nominated a set of movies that people actually saw connected with. Yeah. It was great movies that everyone can connect with. And so that was surprising to me that the viewership was so down. Do you have any theories on that?
I don't know. I mean, maybe it's just, it's tough. I guess it is tough. I mean, maybe people were just kind of like, they didn't want to watch it because it's like so long, or maybe they like started watching and then tuned out. It should be noted that, yeah, while it's the lowest viewership or that they've had in like what did you say again? It was like
the tweets at all time. Was it? I think Jeff Snyder, I think, tweeted out lowest of all time. Still 23 million viewers. So not a bad number, but
no. It is still the most watched award show of the season. Like more so than the Golden Globes, mm-hmm. more so than the, you know, whatever. Probably even more so than the Grammys, honestly. But you know, one theory could be maybe bring back a host. Maybe people do like that, you know, like to have a personality that kind of like steers the show forward, moves it forward. Maybe, I don't know, maybe cut out, like I said, cut out some of the musical numbers mm-hmm. to shorten the show, but also like someone put out a tweet and they said produce a show with a sense of its history. So like, you know, show a lot of clips. Honorary awards and stuff like that. I think that might be an interesting way to fix it. Because I remember, like, at least back in 2014 or like, yeah, you know, maybe a couple years ago, the shows would be like really like clip heavy and interactive. There'd be like some really awesome graphics, and I feel like they've just gotten a little lazy on that. But the other thing is, I think they just need to stop chasing an audience that is not going to watch them, right? They just need to, and you know, it's really funny because this is just such a YouTube thing, but like, chase your core audience, you know? Play into them. Play into cinephiles, film fans, and people that love this medium. Not like someone's parents who are going to maybe tune in on Sunday night because they maybe want to see Brad Pitt for like 5 minutes. Like, play into the people that support these movies and that love the industry, because they're ultimately the people who are going to be watching your show for the entirety of the 3 hours that you have it slotted for. And the last thing I'll say is probably don't have it this early, which is kind of weird to say because I always hate that it's like super late in the year, but I think they overcompensated for it a little bit and it was a little too early. So I don't know, maybe sometime in the middle of February in that sweet spot, not the weekend after the Super Bowl.
Right. That was like, even with my family, it was like, we try and do Sunday nights as kind of family fun nights where we put the phones off to the side and do something just like a board game or go to the park. And so then it was like two Sundays in a row if we had to break our schedule because of like these big cultural event type things, which granted in its own way was kind of fun to be like, 1 week it's like, here kids, this is the Super Bowl, let me explain football to you. And the next week, here's the Oscars, let me try to explain this one to you. But having it back to back was pretty weird.
I think that did affect it, you know, because people were like, well, we had our parties last weekend, we're gonna take it easy, we don't really care about the Oscars. So whereas like if you had it in the middle of the month, or like maybe like when they usually have it the end of February, where people are like, oh yeah, the Oscars, let's watch it, like I feel like they'd probably be more inclined to tune in. But it's weird because I hate having to wait so long because we're already like 2 months into the year. But I guess like thinking on it, it kind of makes sense given the scheduling until then, you know?
Yeah. So I got a couple more thoughts. Me coming a little bit more from the cynical towards award shows, frustrations with Hollywood side of things. I mean, I think they kind of had that 10 years of, you know, we're going to have James Franco and Anne Hathaway host. Like, oh, what did we just do? And then was that Seth MacFarlane singing, "We Saw Your Boobs"? And then it's like very much an identity crisis. And then everything that went down last year where it just felt like Hollywood eating their own and just like no one is good enough to host and they're just digging up dirt. And so I think there's a certain level to which that kind of burned a lot of people. And then, but last year at the same time, while they were at the height of burnt last year, people tuned in out of morbid curiosity. Like, wait, no host? Mm-hmm. I got to see how this is going to go. And they went, oh, but it kind of worked. Well, that I thought I was going to watch like this crazy dumpster fire, and it wasn't that at all. It was actually pretty good. But that didn't because they're like anger watching, it doesn't translate to someone coming back the next year. So I think there's a little bit of that just lingering. Yeah. They need, even to somewhat you said of like, figure out who their actual target audience is, their brand, and lean into that. Just do your brand right, as opposed to desperately chasing after different groups by the worst imaginable pandering of James yeah. Franco in a dress or something like that. Like, no, this is, you're not yeah. going to get the Family Guy crowd to watch the Oscars by having no. Seth MacFarlane sing "We Saw Your Boobs." It's that is not how yeah, that it's works just, at
it's
all.
Not gonna happen.
So I just think there's some of that lingering taste of frustration with Hollywood in the masses that kind of hurts it. But 23 million, like, once again, this is not a small number. This is,
yeah, yeah.
All these CW shows that I watch get like 2 million views. So,
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
This is 10 times that. So, moving along from there to the other big thing to talk about from this weekend, Birds of Prey came out last week. I hadn't seen it. You had seen it. So, you told us it was fun. Told it, you said, way better than both Deadpool movies, and you'd be willing to fight Zach Pope to prove it.
I did. Direct and quote. I will still do that. I believe that it is better than both those movies.
I need some time. I certainly think it's better than Deadpool 2. Yeah. I'd have to see how it sits with me with time. At my coming out of the theater, seeing it two times, I was like, I think I do have it above the first Deadpool. It's like this above it. It's not this.
Yeah.
I'm not going to fight Zach over this, though I might fight him anyway. But, I mean, it's right there with it. I thought
yeah.
they really marketed the movie horribly and made a film that I actually did enjoy. And they sold me yeah. a movie that I was like, I don't know what this is, which yeah. is really frustrating. And so a couple things to talk about with it. First one is just it underperformed. It only yeah. made about $35 million. It was projected like $55 million. So
yeah, I even saw some early projections that were like, oh wait, maybe it might get like 80 to 90 million, and I was like, oh wow, this is like mm-hmm. this is awesome. Yeah.
And then 33 million. So yeah. there's a couple different things that kind of came out of that. The first one is like, oh man, like what went wrong, and disappointment, because yeah. anytime you say one number come below it, you sense that disappointment. And yeah. then you have a group of people that want to spin that into a narrative that I just don't think is even remotely close to good analysis.
Yeah,
and so the whole go woke, go broke, it's a bomb, it's a failure, it's a disaster. I just don't see any of that.
No.
First off, just we'll talk about like talk about how woke it is in just a moment, but on just the level of the box office stuff, the movie cost $85 million to make. $85 million. So right off the bat, your expectations and their expectations for what it's going to do is not the same thing as Endgame. It's not the same thing yeah. as Captain Marvel. It's not the same thing as Black Panther. It's not the same thing as Spider-Man. All of those movies had at least double its budget, maybe triple its budget. Right off the bat, you just have to rearrange what you're imagining this movie can and should do at the box office. Second one, globally, it made about $81 million in its first 3 days. So,
yeah.
right, it's right below its production budget. I tweeted this out, and immediately a bunch of people agreed with me, like, yeah, let's put things in perspective. Of you always have people that respond back, but the marketing! Right, right, I get it. Box office analysis is a lot more complicated than just production budget and box office grosses. You also have to factor in that studios have their cut of the movies and certain people get a percentage of the gross. It's complicated. Mm-hmm. But as a starting point, a movie that makes back its production budget globally in its first 3 days, that's just not a bomb. It's not a disaster.
It's a success, actually. It's
like, yeah, by any reasonable standards, you would say, okay, we're doing okay, but we expect these movies to do really, really well, and they tend to be front-loaded. Other really important piece of, like, information to factor in when you're talking about this specific movie, we had the Oscars this weekend, one of the Best Picture nominees, Ford vs. Ferrari, production mm-hmm. budget, $100 million, $15 million more than Birds of Prey. Opening weekend in the U.S., $31 million, slightly less than Birds of Prey. Not one person put out a video, Ford versus Ferrari, it's a bomb, it's a failure. It's a, like, nobody did that because that's yeah. not a bad number for a movie with that budget. Granted, yeah. different genres. Dad movie, gonna have better legs by the nature of it. Oscar movie, gonna have better legs because of the nature of it. Comic book movie, very front-loaded, gotcha. Tracking with it. But we're talking about nuance. And if
yeah.
what, like, two movies with comparable budgets and comparable opening weekends, two wildly different interpretations, that probably means that there's a lot of people overreacting. And everyone that is kind of like hyping up this, it bombed, it's a failure, they all seem to have that go woke, go broke thing as part of it. It's just another feminist. I don't get it. Like, Charlie's Angels started off, the movie started off, and it's literally this chauvinistic guy being like, women belong in the kitchen. Like, are you good at cooking? And she's like, I'm good at a lot of things. I can even fix a car. Like, fix a car. Women don't need to fix a... Like, it starts off like that. When I think feminist agenda, man-hating, like, it's a movie like this that literally starts off with just like, what is this? Like, what am I watching right now? That's what I think of. I don't think of it's a movie where Harley Quinn is a great fighter and shoots things and it's all a fantasy in her head. And I haven't even heard the compelling argument besides all the guys in it are bad. But if you just swap the movie out and say you have an action movie with all men as leads, the chief of police is normally a jerk. The bad guy's normally a guy. There's a bunch of male henchmen that are bad, and someone's betrayed by I don't even understand watching a movie like counting who's good and who's bad and making these charts. Like, I don't even understand that thought process. And it seems in my mind they're doing the exact thing that they're accusing other people of doing.
And
that's where I go. If you just watch this movie on its own merits, you would not walk out of it being like, "What the agenda?"
I mean, that was like one of the things that I loved about it was like its messaging was great, and it was so it was done so tastefully. Like, there weren't any, like, you know, people give that moment in Endgame, like the girl power team up moment in Endgame, a lot of crap. Maybe rightfully so. I mean, it's probably a little pandering. But like in this movie, like, there was none of that. Like, it was all just like, this is what we're doing. These are the characters. These are the journeys they're going on. This is our messaging here. So I don't know. Like, it all just felt consistent. It wasn't like everyone was like, oh, let's try to push an agenda down my throat. It's like, no, you just think it is because that's what you
inherently want to believe. By which you're viewing the world. You are on the look. You're on a witch hunt for that, which is the thing you're accusing other people of.
No.
Like, I get it when you're talking about, like I said, Charlie's Angels, and the movie starts off, and I'm like, come on. Like, you're preaching your agenda at me. It's so on the nose. If you have a message you want to communicate, tell a story. That's what Birds of Prey does. Birds of Prey, as it's now called.
Harley. Well, that's only on ticketing services. They haven't actually officially changed the name.
We'll get to that in just a second.
First of all, I do want to talk about the title thing because, like, I think the title that they actually gave it is perfect for the film. Like, Birds of Prey and the Fantabulous Emancipation of One Harley Quinn. Now, look,
you like that title.
I do, because I think that it perfectly represents the mind of Harley, what she's going through in that moment. The Birds of Prey, like, I understand, like, the symbolism behind that and, like, what they're trying to get at with that. Also, the Fantabulous Emancipation of One Harley Quinn, you can, like, her whole speech about, do you know what a harlequin is, like, in the bar, that gives the subtitle of that film, like, a whole new context, you know? And so I just feel like that it is so perfect for the movie, but from a marketing standpoint, not really the greatest,
right?
So, like, yeah, maybe they probably should have called the movie Harley Quinn, but I think, like, based off of the trailers and everything, you still know it's a Harley Quinn movie, or you still know that she's in it. So, like, I don't think the title was necessarily the problem when it comes to it. I think it was more so, like, they needed to lean heavily into Harley Quinn, which I think they did a little bit, but I don't know. They couldn't quite, like, find a target audience with
it.
They
couldn't capture the experience of watching the movie with the trailers they put out.
Having seen the film, that's kind of hard to do. Like, it is such a just, like, wild kind of roller coaster of a movie that is, like, basically the product of someone's, like, inner mind, the inner workings of their mind. So, like, I get that's hard to capture.
Yeah, so I, so we're, it's all kind of combined for me. Because for me, I didn't get a good understanding of what they were going for with the film. Like, oh, we're going to do a Birds of Prey movie starring Harley Quinn. So immediately, I know enough about the Birds of Prey and Harley Quinn to go, well, that doesn't make any sense. That's a weird thing to say. And so then they put out the trailer, and it's very clearly a Harley Quinn-led film. And then they start teasing the Birds of Prey at the end of it. And so it's like, I don't know what this is. I don't know how this is going to work. And then in some of the stuff they tried to do with the way they captured the action in it, like the leg breaking scene at the beginning is in the trailers. Yeah. And I thought that from watching the trailer that she jumped on his balls. I actually thought that's what was in the, and I think I said that in my trailer reactions, and I was like, that's so juvenile. And then it like zooms in on his face. And so then, and I legitimately thought while watching the movie that they used a different clip in the trailer than in the movie because they couldn't show the leg snapping. And then I went back to cut my review of it. And I was like, wait, no, in the trailer, it's the same. You see his leg snap. Like, okay. Like, that's the same shot. I don't believe in the movie it does the zoom in though, or at least certainly not the way it's cut. When you watch the movie, you see it and it's like, oh, whoa, Harley's crazy. When you watch it in the trailer, it comes off like 1960s Batman, like, oh, look at a guy making a funny reaction. And
see, I actually, in the trailer, that came off as like very Tarantino to me.
In the context of everything else, I didn't know how it fit together. And like when I watched the trailer, that was the whole thing to me. It's like, I just don't, they put out these images and it looked like CW shots. And then they put out the trailer and, you know, she's drinking and like, do you know what a Harlequin is? And then she snaps the guy's leg, zooms in on the face. And so I couldn't grab hold of where we were going with some of it.
Yeah.
And then you watch the movie and you just immediately I don't want to go into spoilers specifically, but you know, it starts off with kind of her backstory of sorts in a way that you're like, you immediately get this movie is her mind telling her story and it just interpreted totally differently. I thought the marketing on it was really bad.
They probably needed to play more into the action and kind of fun that they that was had like in the movie, like play into like the I don't know, like the I guess that's the only thing I really think of. Play into the style, play into the action, get people really excited for it based off of that, and maybe less of trying to capture like I don't know, like just the wackiness of what's going on. Yeah. Because I mean, literally every single person I talked to was like, they were like, I was like, oh yeah, Birds of Prey, you got to go see it, it's so good. And they're like, what, that movie looks so bad. Yeah. It looked terrible. That's like
everyone.
I don't think that so it's like, if people are saying that like based off of the trailers, based off of the marketing, it's like, okay, so obviously you didn't market this movie well.
Right.
Just
something went
flat
horribly
out.
Wrong with the marketing. And it's weird, especially like, watching the marketing after you've seen the movie, it's hard to even pinpoint why. Like, we're right now, we're like, I don't even know what was wrong with it. But like, I watched the trailers. I was not excited to watch the movie. And then I heard all this positive buzz, saw it, and I was like, that was a lot of fun. Was I just amped up in the moment? Let me watch it a second time. Saw it a second time. I was like, yeah, especially as it went along with the style of it, the way the action was shot, like Harley's actually like has emotion. And then I watch the trailer and I go, a lot of that is in there. Like it kicks off and like, she's like, do you know, like these, some of the most heartfelt scenes in the movie. Do you know what a Harley Quinn is? It's in the trailer. So the best shots in the action are in the trailer. The stuff that I'm raving about the cool action being cool, it's all in the trailer. But for whatever reason, it just was not, it didn't capture the experience of it. And I wonder if maybe it's even if they needed to do like have a trailer that was more like a longer scene, as opposed to like doing like quick cuts. Like, would it play better if you had, you know, I think it's kind of a negative example, or I don't need to cast judgment. Like the first trailer for Frozen 2, the first minute is just Elsa running into water and it like plays out this whole scene. So if you could take like a scene in this movie that kind of captured it a little bit, and then the second half, now that you've accustomed our brains to what we're really watching, but I don't know. Actually, the first trailer, also the musical choice, I thought did kind of is a little bit too serious while being whimsical, and so it didn't feel quite right either. So anyway, that's some thoughts on it. Other one I want to talk about on this one real quick. the reaction from people I've talked to seems to be pretty split. It's split, really? Split three ways. You've got the go woke, go broke crowd that think it's trash. And that they can't,
who haven't even seen it.
Or some of them, they seem to say, indicate they did, but they never could give me the, like, what's the scene that's builds that argument. Then, you know, majority like, oh, that was a ton of fun. And then I've seen a lot of people and people I talked to in person, like two groomsmen for my wedding used the specific word boring, which I was surprised by that.
I can't even imagine, like, what, like, nothing about that film. I've also seen it like two or three times, and I'm like, not once am I bored. I have yet to understand that argument at all. It is like constantly just like entertaining. Like, yeah, it's not action all over the place, but there's so much style. There's so many interesting things going on with the characters. There's so many like eccentric characters that are just like super enjoyable to watch. Like, Black Mask, or like, I mean, like Harley, and like even like Renee Montoya, a little, like, she's got her own thing going on there. And so, like, to say it's boring, I don't understand. Like,
yeah, I when I heard that specific word, I was like, the guy that said it is Vincent. He was actually the best man at my wedding. So I've known him since the third grade. He's a lot more indie film. He's not a big blockbuster guy for the most part. And so when he said that, I interpreted through it, oh, it's just him. And then I kept hearing other people say that same word. And I was like, wait, it's not that. Even I'm trying to find the right tweet. Our friend Jared Buckendahl, who's normally high energy. He does like comedy movie reviews, and he was negative on it. So I was trying to find the exact tweet, and I was like, "This is fascinating," because I was not expecting him to be one of the people to say that. And one of my buddies that said that he was kind of bored by it. He does editing. He said that, well, I think maybe it was because the fight scenes have so many long takes in the fights, and therefore they didn't have the energy. And I was like, that's what made him awesome, is that it's like these wide, long takes. That's, as I say that constantly in my reviews, I either criticize a movie for being too close up and choppy, or I praise it for giving me like these long takes where I can see everything with good choreography. And this was long, wide takes with great choreography. Some of them, not just great choreography, but great atmosphere. I mean, the prison sequence, both sides to it, you either have confettis in the air and these clouds, or there's rain. And so it's big, long, wide shots that are just gorgeous to look at with cool stuff happening. And so you hear him say, like, I don't even know how to respond to that.
Yeah, well, and I mean, I guess my thing is, like, why is that, like, applauded and like beloved in the John Wick movies, but like in this movie it's boring? Like, you know, like, it doesn't, like, that doesn't make sense to me, because it's like, it's the same people who did the stunts and like directed those sequences in the John Wick movie,
right,
did the action in this movie. And I actually thought the action was like really creative. It like utilized the environment, like the funhouse scene, they're like flipping hands in people's faces, they're bouncing on trampolines. Like, it's just a really inventive way of like showcasing each of the characters' individual fight style, and like, but also like feeling very like realistic, you know? Like, there wasn't a whole lot of CG in this film, which I loved. It was a very practically executed movie.
Watching it the second time in particular, I was like, oh, one of the reasons I really enjoyed this is because it's not a big blockbuster spectacle film.
Yeah.
This, like, I love mid-range budget action thrillers. That's the stuff that I grew up on, and we don't get very many of those anymore. And that's kind of why John Wick is one of those movies that pops out, because it is a beloved franchise from the last decade that is mid-range budget, practical action and stunts. And now Birds of Prey is a movie in one of these franchises that is mostly big spectacle films like this. I mean, Aquaman, it's just CGI everything. And then and then you have this movie where the big climax is a bunch of people having a fist fight in a funhouse, and then Harley Quinn on roller skates dragging behind this car with, you know, allusions to kind of like the chase in Raiders of the Lost Ark, where she's on the front of it and stuff like that, except through the mind of Harley Quinn. And I was like, this is, I love that we're getting this. I love that we're getting this new thing. Here's the tweet that Jared wrote. And like, yeah. if you don't know him, if you don't follow him stuff, go check him out. But Jared Buckendahl, very lively, vibrant. And so I thought he would be prime audience for this one. He wrote this: I can sit here and say Birds of Prey was boring. It takes 45 minutes to get into the film. The musical choices don't land. Most of the humor falls flat. The structure of the unreliable narrator results in a muddled story, but I won't. I can just say it's a movie that I won't watch again. And I was like, wow. Almost everything that he listed, I was like, I feel the opposite. Yeah. Like, I feel the narrative, if it wasn't an unreliable narrator, it wouldn't work. But the fact that she is an unreliable narrator, you can tell kind of this fantasy story where she's raiding the police station with a beanbag gun and confetti and things like that.
Yeah.
And you can do that because it's unreliable and because it's this chaotic back and forth. That's what made a story that could be a little bit too straightforward and simple interesting, because you're watching this ensemble and how everyone plays into it at different points of time. So it was just interesting. Like, one of the guys I went to go see with it the second time, he went, this is kind of like when you go to a new restaurant that someone tells you is great and you try something new you've never had before. And it's interesting. It seems like it was cooked great and I just didn't like it. I would totally get that. Like, I would not hold that against someone. But when they're specifically using the word boring, I'm fascinated by that take on this film.
Yeah, it continues to baffle me, but I don't know.
So, closing out today's episode, real quick, let's do a little section called Deep Cuts, where we're going to kind of make some...
Deep Cuts.
Yeah, Deep Cuts. We're going to make some recommendations that are slightly deeper cuts than people normally are thinking about, or whatever thing comes to mind. Today, since we're talking about the Oscars... What are some Oscar movies in your mind that people should check out that they haven't? And I'll kick things off. And I'm gonna
cheat. I was gonna say you kick.
I'll kick things off and cheat a little bit and say, if you're kind of one of my younger viewers, listeners that isn't as much into modern day Best Picture winners and stuff like that, because things have shifted a little bit in the kind of things that sometimes win and get nominated. Go check out the Best Picture winners of the 90s. During the 90s, like, they went for like big hit movies. And it's like Braveheart and it's Forrest Gump and it's Saving Private Ryan. And they're movies that are like, they're all big, they're well-made, great actors, but they're designed also to be big hit movies. And the way people consume films now, that's not... Like, people watch big blockbusters now. They watch comic book movies. Scorsese isn't entirely wrong about all that. And it's changed what types of movies get made as prestige films. And so then that makes a scenario where a lot more prestige films are smaller types of stories.
Yeah.
And so, like I said, if you're kind of a younger, a little bit skeptical, go back and look at the list of Best Picture winners throughout all the 90s. It's a diverse set of films. They're different. They're interesting. Those are the movies that made me love film. Like, I'm in middle school and my parents are like, all right, we'll let you go see Braveheart. Changed my life. Getting to see it, like, you know, limbs getting cut off, and it's this big epic story. Forrest Gump came out a year or two before that, and like these movies that when you're a little kid you're used to just watching Disney movies, and then it's like this drama that I could watch in middle school. It was this huge, massive hit movie. So good. It beat out Shawshank Redemption and Pulp Fiction, which people, sometimes history is kind of funny that way. But that's the sort of stuff that won, stuff that middle schoolers would love. And things have changed a little bit since then. But how about you?
I mean, like, there's so many you could go with. I mean, like, you could go, like, all the way back and just, like, because I don't know. I guess if you are some of the younger viewers, go back and watch, like, classic movies that were nominated for Oscars. Like Alfred Hitchcock's Rebecca. It's the only film of his to have ever gotten awards love, really. There's like a massive truck in the background of this right now.
I started to hear that and I started looking up like, what am I hearing in my headphones? Yeah.
Sean's about to get abducted. No, if anyone's going to get abducted, it's going to be me.
Quick story. So I went out to California last October and met Griffin, stayed with Tyler, and so spent the whole week there. While I'm there, I'm like midnight or something like that, sitting there updating Twitter or something like that, arguing with people, and the house like rocks a little bit. And because I'm in Texas, we don't have earthquakes. My thought was like, is someone like working on the roof at midnight? Like what? Who is going on that they're like doing construction right now? And then on Twitter, because I follow a bunch of people in LA, all these tweets start showing up in my feed saying like, was that an earthquake? Was that an earthquake? And I was like, wait, I went to California and I got a little mini earthquake while I was here?
Yeah.
And literally my thought was someone's working on the roof. Probably because I'm an idiot, because that doesn't make any sense. Anyway, yeah. Sorry. That was a total rabbit trail.
No. That's totally fine. I always say go back and watch some of the classic ones. Like I said, Alfred Hitchcock's Rebecca is excellent. I love Marlon Brando's performance in On the Waterfront, which is Elia Kazan, who he is just... I don't think I've disliked a single film that guy has ever made. So if you like want to get into classic, like listen, it's like classic black and white films, but they've got like very like modern day sort of performances in them. On the Waterfront is excellent. I don't even know if it was nominated, but A Streetcar Named Desire is also just phenomenal in terms of just acting. Yeah. Unbelievable movie. So like go check those out if you're interested.
See, this is why I bring you on, because I'm like, watch Braveheart. They cut limbs off. You're like, the acting in the 1950s for Marlon Brando.
Yeah,
two different worldviews.
They're probably two of my favorite performances he's ever done, just because of how different the acting style is from anything else prior. Like, you go back and you watch classic movies, and they're just like, oh, yes, I'm going to go over there. Like, you know, it's very just like... There was a style to it, and then like Marlon Brando comes in, he's like very humanist, he's very realistic in like what he's trying to do, which is why I think those movies have really like stood the test of time. But what was the other? Oh, if we're going like in more modern context, I think the Best Picture winner that I really love, but everyone seems to just like poo-poo on, and I don't think has really like resonated with a lot of people since it won, was 2011's film The Artist. I loved The Artist just because it was an homage to like classic cinema, like silent movies. It's got a very just like eccentric performance from Jean Dujardin. I believe it was like a French film, and whatnot. But it's just like it had a lot to say, kind of about like the shifting of the industry from like the silent films to the talkies, and this guy trying to find his place in the middle of it. And so there's a lot of sweet moments in that movie, and I think. It gets a lot of due crap.
Yeah. All right, final little segment on here. What should people watch this weekend? I haven't seen Sonic yet. You have. What can you say about Sonic?
So I actually don't know if I think the embargo is on Wednesday. When is this episode coming out?
Wednesday.
Oh, it is? Okay, all right. I don't know if this is breaking embargo or not. I don't go see Sonic.
Uh-oh.
It's some people have tweeted out their social reactions, so I guess this can be reaction.
280-character sentence.
You better count the characters here. I thought it sucked. It was annoying. It was kind of contrived. I don't know, I've seen it, the road trip kind of movie done a million times before. Also, Sonic was a jerk in that movie. He was like unbelievably annoying. I'm kind of sick of the Deadpool shtick just being done over and over with like less wit each time.
You're probably over your 280 characters.
Yeah, I definitely am. Jim Carrey's fun occasionally, but
so
it's
the other people I've seen on Twitter are a little bit more positive than you, but no one was glowing. I haven't seen anyone that was fully glowing, but people are like, that wasn't as bad as I thought it would be. That's a lot of what I've seen. So my expectations have been were never particularly high, and so maybe there's room for me to be a little bit surprised, as I'm not expecting much at all.
I think that's the thing. Just go in. If you're going to go see it, go in with like the lowest of low expectations.
Even from the trailers, it's like road trip with Sonic on Earth.
I don't. I can't. Yeah, I can't quite say that they're like, the entire, all the money and hours spent redoing Sonic was worth it. That's really what it comes down to. I'm like, you overworked those poor VFX artists for this.
So, closing today's show out, next week when we come back, we'll actually be diving into Sonic even more. Next week's going to be all about video game movies. However Sonic turns out, however people respond to it, we'll be talking about that. We're talking about why do they keep being so bad? Why is such a high percentage of them awful? I think I've watched 25. I've watched over 20 video game movies in the last 3 weeks. So every day I'm watching at least one of them. And it's pretty phenomenal just how awful to only mediocre they are.
There's really interesting because I did an interview with the composer for Birds of Prey, Daniel Pemberton, and something interesting about him was he got his start, growing up, he wrote tips columns for video game magazines, and so he was he's a big fan of games and whatnot. And so I asked him the question. I was like, why has there not been a truly great video game movie? And he was like, I'm as mind blown as all of you because it's basically gift wrapped to you. You have stuff like Metal Gear, you have stuff like Assassin's Creed, and he brought up Uncharted, which is like, it couldn't be easier if you tried. You literally just have to adapt it. And so
this is a tease of what we'll be talking about next week in extensive form for about 20 minutes. Remember every great thing about that conversation. 3C will be joining us as well, as he's all into retro type stuff and things like that. So this should be a great conversation next week. Griffin, where can we find you on the internet?
Yeah, you can find me on the FilmSpeak channel, where I will have my glowing review of Sonic up within the next couple of days. And then you can also look out for my review of The Invisible Man. And then you can also follow me on Twitter at Griff Schiller.
And remember, this podcast is currently only available on my YouTube channel and Spotify, but as soon as possible, it's going to be in all the other places you're looking for it. Some of them just, they take time. They have to approve you. They look over your stuff first. And so I literally applied about 2 weeks ago for Apple and just haven't heard back. But as soon as possible, it will be up there. Thank you so much for listening, and some of you for watching, and keep talking movies, TV, and the Oscars way too much.